This episode is brought to you by the European Coworking Assembly. We are everything coworking Europe. If you head to the Coworking Assembly website, you can connect with our World Coworking, European Freelancers Week, Coworking Symposium, Coworking Library, and Coworking Tools.
Hello, folks, and welcome to this week's edition of the Coworking Values podcast. We're recording this as a live session from one of our London Coworking Assembly events, and we're also going to publish it in as a podcast because a lot of the podcasts we're doing here that you're going to be listening to over the next few weeks are leading up to the session we're doing for the Coworking Idea Project in our session at Coworking Conference, which is online and in Vienna. In our studio today, always like that, I always have this imagination that I have a real live studio. So Carmen, do you want to introduce yourself and say what you're known for and what you'd like to be known for, and then we'll go to Aidan and Kofi, and then we'll get right into the action.
Yeah, it was fast. So I'm known for helping co-working spaces, operating their spaces, you know, automating the majority of your time, just really helping new businesses internationally at Nexidus. So I'm always of service to co-working, to the co-working industry.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, ma'am. Aidan.
Hi. I'm known for, I work with Ailey, I work for Ailey, I work at owner and founder. I help young people predominantly adopt a set of values that they can then apply into different areas of their lives and circumstances as well.
Thank you very much. And you work in a co-working space in London at the moment.
Yeah, I did. I had to leave, but I did. But it was a great co-working space called Art Club. And they're brilliant in terms of not only just design and concept, but they try to give as much value as they can, which is, and hearing the feedback from customers is very, very rewarding to hear as well. And it's such a relaxed, cool space that everybody seems to enjoy.
Thank you. I'm going to move on to Kofi. Is this what do you do, sir? I don't think anyone knows.
I run a charity called Urban MBA, and we are very much into entrepreneurship, just as we think that the future is rapidly changing due to technology. A new set of skills need to be developed, in particular in enterprise. So we run 6-12 weeks courses, and next year we will be running a one-year step-up course, which we want to try and rival what we have in education or college or maybe first-year university.
And thanks, Kofi. And here in London, we have a really close relationship with Urban MBA. And one of the main points is to help young people from the Urban MBA program get involved and get access to co-working spaces, because one of the most important things you can do in any career or business is build your network. And co-working spaces are such a great place to build your network. So we're gonna jump in. We have a few things. I'm going to ask you to kick off and set the scene, Kofi. And then we'll get into a discussion. Look, each person here on our call has a good point to make. We'll just kind of make them, and then we'll get into a discussion. So do you want to kick off about education and 5G and the future from your little crystal ball there in Hackney?
I don't know about that. But I think the topic is, how has Black Lives Matter movement made a difference? And from my perspective, I just want to touch on what's maybe historically happened, because although we're talking about the movement, there also seems to be a little bit of the sense that there's a little bit of backlash. We've had it in football where people are saying, should we still take the knee, all of these things, and should we still continue the campaign? But I remember going back to Rodney King way back in 1982 and something very similar to what's happened to George Floyd all those years back, and how brutal that was. There wasn't as many social media channels that would maybe send that information out, but there was riots in America from that, and a lot of hip-hop at the beginning, what I listened to, was framed around a lot of stuff to do with police brutality. So we've had the same subject happen over 20 years ago in a very similar scenario, and we didn't move that much forward, because the same thing has happened again in COVID to George Floyd. And I just want to frame that part, that the reason we can never stop pushing ahead with this type of agenda or talking about black lives is that we've had 30 or 40 years between the two incidents and it's happened again. So in order to do that, we really need to look at what we have to do to change, and we need to keep it in the forefront in terms of public, whatever else we can do to continue to drive that. I think the biggest interest for me has also been how much brands have changed in terms of their advertising and everything else they do. And that's because this movement has sparked more black movement for ourselves. And in particular, things like the Black Pounds are having a massive effect on those brands and what they do. So we were talking previously in another podcast and mentioned to Tash that I've never seen so many different minorities in adverts and everything else that brands are doing as I've seen over the last year. So the brands are doing it really from a monetary perspective, that they realize they have to or face maybe cancel culture with Generation Z, who are the biggest generation at the moment and have the big spending power. On the other hand, we also need to think about then how do we really change this for the future and what does the future hold? And for me, until we can start looking at education, which I will come back to later on, until we can start looking at education and changing what's happening in education and having much more focus on minorities, Wales are due to start a curriculum in 2022 that focuses a lot more on minorities. So I think that's the first time anybody's really put that into their curriculum. I don't see the same thing happening in the UK. Hackney's tried a few things, but we haven't really moved forward in that area. And I think until we do, the problem will still exist and the same situation may happen again in 30 years' time as what's already happened, because the change has to happen at a younger level. But I'll come back to that a bit later.
Thanks, Kofi. I remember around the time of George Floyd's murder, they were saying, oh, what can we do? And you said, you know, just doing a little bit every day and never letting up. And that is,
yeah,
that seemed, because I was very keen to like every Chuck D post on Instagram, but it's not really doing anything, isn't it? You know, I mean, he's doing a lot, but, and that, we'll put a link in the show notes to the Co-Working Idea Project. And that came, that's a lot of people who have been in this conversation for a long time in co-working, getting together and running an event or a challenge every month. Because a lot of people who run small businesses and co-working spaces, they haven't got a Nike star inclusion and diversity department. You know, they're like, they've got to like, you know, clean the toilets and unlock the doors and everything else. And they kind of want to get to this stuff, but don't know where to begin. And I'm just thinking of, you know, how many things as a result of being involved in that project I've read to get to a level of understanding. And if I had to run a whole business with like 100 people in the building, you know, it's not like, I don't mean like I don't have time for it, I don't not care, but it's like, where do you get to that thing? So I'm going to jump over to Carmen now. Can you make your case for the viewers at home? Because this, like the industry's perspective is really, really important. And after like running a co-working space and working in the industry and all the people you talk to, where's your head at for this topic at the moment?
So if I were to refer to the main question, so how has Black Lives Matter made a difference? Given the historical context that Kofi gave us, it hasn't made a difference yet. It's a very premature question, right? There's no answer to this question. It's too early to say. Change, if you think about it from a company perspective, from an industry perspective, from a personal perspective, has to be done internally. So no matter if brands or co-working spaces put diversity on their websites, put people from different ethnic backgrounds as their branding, right? If internally the change is not being made, you will not demonstrate any policies, any, you know, different communication styles, you know, the negative stereotypes attached to the culture, to the people, and even the cultural expectations. So in terms of industry, I recall when, you know, the day it was televised that George Floyd died. And in the co-working industry, I felt like this very heavy silence, right? There was not much, in terms of like, you know, my environment, there was not a lot of awareness. There was not even a sentiment of sympathy or empathy demonstrated in the industry. And I think we really need to work harder, because it's not that difficult to empathize. It's not that difficult to sympathize. And like all of you mentioned at the very beginning, we're dealing with different generations. So the generation that we're catering for, and I speak from the generation that I'm working with in terms of co-working industry, is a younger generation. So we'll say they are in between the generation Z, millennials, and the generation, say, X, for example. And these people, when making decisions, they decided on software. That's a very modern decision, right, compared to doing things with Excel or doing things manually. So why not also have a modern decision of saying, okay, how can I make my space more inclusive? How can I make people comfortable in my space that come from different backgrounds? How can, as an owner of a space, I can make the world a bit more welcoming and empathize with people suffering from different backgrounds? So you find some spaces are capable of doing, for example, in the industry, different pricing for students or for seniors, or different pricing for this and for that. So if you can think that far, I'm sure within the industry you can think even further away and say, okay, inclusivity that includes diversity in race, you know, in gender. But it's very, very, very important, like I said at the beginning, that the change is done internally and not just pictures and not just like, okay, we are diverse. Very important that the board of members, the people making the decisions, the people working in the spaces demonstrate that diversity for Black Lives Matter to make a real difference. You know?
What is I really struggle with is, so there was the example that always stays in my head from last year is there's a guy who runs a co-working space in Hackney, and he, you know, I was talking about this topic to him, and he said, and he wasn't, you know, being horrible. He goes, I just think this, all this inclusion and diversity stuff is a storm in a teacup. And I was like, but you run a co-working space in Hackney, man. Like, it must occur to you on some level. And I bring that up here because I didn't really, you know, I was like lost for words about what to say to him, because in an encouraging way, because it was, and I feel like a bit horrible saying this, like he just didn't get it. And to say to someone, oh, you just don't get it, man, is like really unhelpful, but I couldn't understand how he couldn't even get it a little bit. And like, how could you comment on that? Because I can't really formulate a question.
I think it's totally normal. Like, for example, I would know the perspective of someone with a hearing disability, unless I was around someone with a hearing disability and I faced the same difficulties they face on a day-to-day basis. Like, for example, wanting to call the emergency but speak sign language, so I cannot really tell the emergency service what happened to me. So unless you put yourself under the skin, all you are surrounded, well, it is kind of in Hackney, but unless he exposes himself to the subject, it's very normal for people not to know. You'd be surprised. Black Lives Matter is not that popular amongst the other demographic. It's not. Like, you'd be surprised if you look at the percentages. It's very normal for them not to know, because if I'm very comfortable in my environment of 10 white friends and in my company of like 20 white people and one black person, why would I take the time to understand this one black person and what they're going through and the violence that exists in their world, you know? Therefore, it will be hard for me to relate and do something about it. So awareness is super important. And recognizing spaces, so for example, well, I feel like coffee has something to say, but recognizing spaces that take, that make the effort, or recognizing people like you, Bernie, that makes the effort to go out and learn. I remember my manager at my space, he read a book about, I think it was like, what not to say to black people or something, she lost her friends, and she was telling me about the book. And for me, it's a great gesture to take yourself from your environment and go and learn. And unless you do that, it's so normal for people to say stuff like this to you, Bernie. I think it's pretty normal.
Thank you. That was a very elegant answer. I feel cool there. Let's, Kofi, chip in there, and then we'll go to Aidan.
Yeah, I was just going to say that part of empathy, and the reason why, in my opinion, in the co-working space, it doesn't touch them is what I've been talking about. The hard facts are usually around economics. And so if the money is not relevant to the co-working space at the moment, it isn't their concern. They don't target that community. And so economically, they're not going to be any worse off if they are not bringing those people in, Bernie. That's the point I wanted to try and make, that a lot of this stuff is to do with money. It's to do with economics. When I talk about the brands, they are worried about losing money from their target consumer. So because the co-working spaces haven't got minorities as target consumers, they will not feel the effect of them not going there. And so then, to Carmen's point, they can just operate as normal because it doesn't make any difference in their world or not, whether they choose to do it internally or go forward, I think is something that has to be considered. Many of these things in life that we talk about are usually down to economics and it's down to money. And it's one of those things that we don't add into the whole pit of where we are, but the reasons why other areas have changed is not really because of the whole what's happening. It's more, is it a question of we're going to lose money, and are these people now not going to contribute to what we do, and that is a bigger problem for them.
Yeah. I'm going to jump onto Aidan there.
Hey, Aidan.
So just dive in, Aidan.
Yeah. Great point so far, honestly. But beginning with what Kofi was speaking about in terms of Rodney King, that generation, to my understanding, that generation was very limited on, I would say, one belief that they can make a very impactful noise, and the opportunities that we have today, they didn't have, especially for media. And in that time, a lot of people, it's like, it started an understanding, it started an awareness. And then for us, for it to happen again in our, in my generation, it's like, okay, we understand that this is wrong through many years. We can actually do something about it this time. And that's what I'm seeing today. It's seeing the movement, the Black Lives Matter movement as a body. People either protest, people even started new businesses, people making noise like we're doing right now. Everyone's trying to push their energy, and they don't want it to die because they don't want a repeat of what's been happening throughout the decades, throughout history. And that's the part of what I feel like all four of us here are doing as well, is trying to make the most out of what we do and who we are as a person. And it just so happens that Black Lives Matter movement correlates with it as well. And in terms of like branding and stuff like, and the industry, it's in industries itself, there's some industries that actually care, but it's a very small window. They actually care to make a change and create an ethical way of doing it. But there's other industries that say, oh, let's just latch on and move forward with kind of bandwagon on what's been happening. I see them as like leeches. They just leech onto things and just suck it dry until they made use of it until the next opportunity comes and is in the forefront of people's minds.
Aidan, someone of your age, if someone comes up and says, "Oi, mate, what's all this Black Lives Matter thing about?" And maybe not in that voice, but yeah. how would you explain to someone who what it means? Because it's not, from my, and I'm going to say, like, for me, it's not, one thing I've gotten a lot of confrontations about is people would say, particularly last August, or that kind of time when people, it got momentum and become more than a move beyond George Floyd's murder, people would tweet like, oh, it's not just Black lives, it's all lives. Like, no, you don't get it, mate. It's like this, and it's a whole 400 year history, mm-hmm. and that's been kind of built upon the needs that I feel, from my perspective, at stake, and I need to make an effort to understand what has come before to understand on what's going on now. And is that, and you're allowed to, I know this is going to be published, but you're allowed to say that's totally out of whack, Mitchell. What are you thinking?
No, it's, so for me, it's like Black Lives Matter saying, okay, this is our time for us to birth a new way of perspective for the entire world. It's not just for Black lives, it's for all lives. But we're just using our platform as a way to say, look, what's happening in this world in different industries isn't right. And it just so happens that with Black lives, it's just the most predominant view that people see, or I guess the most, the world accepts it as the most oppressed way, oppressed culture, oppressed race as Black lives. But from, it's like what we're trying to use that as an understanding and a gateway to say, look, if we do things better for us, it can shape a framework for other people and other races. So it's not just about Black lives, but we're just using it as, look, use this as a, like a beacon, and then from there, we can help all races and all in all industries and all lives and all families and shape different perspectives of a newer generation, more so than the older generation.
Great. Thank you. Carmen or Kofi, do you want to follow up with that?
Well, I think that they're a braver generation, but in particular, in terms of what we're talking about with Aiden and Gen Z, I have a lot of them around me, as you all know, Bernie, and they are the most opinionated. I mean, I was bad to my parents, I thought, and my parents always used to say all these things to me about how we were rude and didn't understand history and all of that, because they were first generation African Ghanaians. And I'm sure Carmen has that whole understanding and aid in that our culture means that we have to sort of follow some of the traditions that are about. Gen Z, on the other hand, are breaking a lot of those taboos because we're three generations down, and they are far more braver. But I think more importantly, as I mentioned earlier on, they have multiple channels to voice their opinion. And I don't think where we had, and yeah, I'm going to frame it in this way for you. If you wanted to do a TV program as a Black person or put something together maybe 20 years ago, you'd have to form your producers and whatever, and you'd have to go to the BBC, etc., or whoever it may be. And there would be gateways that you wouldn't be able to get through. People block you and it'd be impossible. We've now got people like, I don't know if you know Chunks, if you guys do not know him, he's who's on YouTube. He's changed the narrative because he would have never got that opportunity ever in the day gone by without some of these new channels that we have, like YouTube, etc., and all of those types of things. So they're beginning to recognize that a lot of their power, and they know as well that they have these mediums that they can talk and people are listening to them. So it's much harder to protect some of the gateways. The two areas that, the three areas that we struggle the most are in co-working, as Carmen said, in something like theater and arts, and culture in particular, and the technology areas. Those three areas are the areas where we haven't broken down, but we're finding different ways of trying to do it. So going back to the point, I think Gen Z have got more channels to be able to voice their opinion, and that's why brands have to take them so much more seriously compared to where we were before, whereas those other areas are not dependent, or I've still got those people that are keeping the gateways shut and not allowing people of color or minorities to get into those areas. And that's that white middle class stuff that you always talk about, Bernie.
As I am a fully professional white middle class individual, my parents pay for my education. And that's why I'm doing podcasts. Carmen, take us to the bridge.
I strongly agree with both of you. In fact, the point of economics really, Kofi, hits you know, the nail in the head, because Chunks is on YouTube representing Foot Asylum, and the majority of the clients of Foot Asylum buying trainers is the Black part, right?
Yeah.
So brands and industries in which the Black pound has a huge impact, fashion, you call it music, because rappers will, you know, have an influence on the brands and so on and so forth. Super easy, you know, and it's super convenient to put forward Black people and diversity in their announcements. But still, in the back of the scenes, for example, the people making the decisions is still not totally Black. It's just the people being the entertainer.
Yeah.
And with regards to what Aidan was saying, of course, this generation is different because our parents worked really hard, sacrificed a lot, and our previous generations even went as far as being taken away from their countries and their rights. They worked so hard, so that we now have the purchasing power, so that our pound, right, has enough power to make an impact. Only because now we can spend more. The Generation X can spend more. And the Generation X has more information, has more access to information. The internet is free. Like, we have platforms so you can just create a Facebook page or an Instagram page and talk and people will listen. So baby boomers were like worried about getting a stable job, you know, doing well and just going up and up in their career. Generation X and millennials, they're like, well, this company doesn't stand for diversity. This company doesn't do anything for the environment. So, no, I don't want to work for them. So they have a real powerful way of being. And that's why it looks like we're making more noise, but generations have been making noise for ages. It's just that there's been like a slight change, again, Kofi, in that economical power. And that goes back to the ownership topic that I wanted to discuss with you, Brian, is that if we become owners of our own spaces, if we own land, if we become more financially, say, independent in a way that it's our pound is more powerful, you will see change in industries because they will recognize. So, for example, once co-working sees that, okay, Africa is a continent, because I have so many different clients all over the world, Africa as a continent brings a lot of revenue. Believe me, they will start being the target for like marketing. We'll be doing SEO markets for different countries within Africa. But until then, technology, for example, for payment gateways and such, for a co-working space to receive payments as an operator is still not yet fully developed. So even companies that, you know, like Stripe, PayPal, they're not making it easier for, you know, co-working spaces in Africa to operate financially. If that's not even a priority for them, then co-working spaces within mainland Africa cannot really be as independent as a space in Europe or a space in the US where the technology is tailored for them, the currency is perfect, the language is perfect, and the way things work is perfect and adapted to the culture. So until like co-working spaces in Africa or Black co-working spaces dominate the industry, like we dominate in fashion and music, then I'm afraid it will take a while until you see the change in co-working.
Thank you very much, Carmen. We're going to, unless you've got anything killer to say there, Aidan and Kofi, we're going to wrap up now. And then
I just have one more back. Very, very quick. Those position of power at the top is what we never, ever touch on so much when we talk about this type of things. And I think Carmen just brought that up about those there. Politically at the top, and I think the question that I'd love people to think about, if we change things politically, there are so many artifacts and everything that the UK has, even in their museums and stuff, that belong to different countries, that if they do admit this at a political level, they would probably have to give those things back in terms of like what PASS has done with changing their business name for their school. So I'm wondering if sometimes the reluctance to change, especially at the top level, is that you have to look at all of those things that you've done and probably answer for them. And is that why at the top level, those areas, there is never any change in in terms of what we need to do, because you do have to answer for it. And I think that that's why it's always been hidden in that way. And David Lammy's point last year that they paid all the slaves up to, all the slave owners up to only 5 or 10 years ago, and it was the equivalent of a couple of trillion pounds that they've been paying the slave owners compensation for losing their slaves. Now, that should be a public inquiry, Bernd, right? Why has that happened? Because what you're then saying, and when I look at these things at the top level, what you're then saying is that actually we agree with you and you lost out by us allowing slaves to be free. And so we'll pay you off for that. Why are they doing that? That should be something they have to answer to. So it's too big a discussion maybe for now, but I just want to leave with that thought to the top level, that it's about economics and it's about change and those gatekeepers in a lot of these areas, and they never, ever really bring those things to the table. And so that's why we never get enough change as a Black Lives Movement.
Aidan, have you got anything to add before we go?
Yeah, one quick thing. On top of that, I'm starting to see, well, not starting, but because of the movement, people are being more celebrated into positions of power. That, because now I'm hearing our first Black lady in this area, or first Black man in this area, or first Black person in this area, that was obviously a predominantly Caucasian-based area. Now it's like, okay, because we're slowly moving into these higher spaces, I guess, it's going to take a lot of patience, but a lot of assertiveness as well in how we move to get to the higher, to the top, and really make the biggest changes that we will want. And that's going to take, that might take 100 years, but it's going to happen. It's only going to happen if we continue to make noise and continue to move aggressively, but patiently at the same time.
I saw something funny on the internet. It was an interview to Barack Obama, actually. Mm-hmm. And the question wasn't, how does it feel to be the first Black president of the United States? It was like, how does it feel to be the last Black president?
Oh, the comedian.
And I was like, oh, God, for the next 50 years, like, you're the only one. That's it. It's done. You know?
Saw that.
So we're gonna wrap it up there, folks. Something I would, if you're listening to this, and I hope you are, I would encourage you to look at the next co-working or workspace conference you go to and look at the lineup of the speakers and count how many men, how many women, and how many people of color across those two genders are available there. And hopefully we will start to see in 2022 that moving to much more representation there. And our co-working idea project topic this month was about inclusive events, or not so much about inclusive events, about like representation at events and making an effort to design your event so everybody, every human being is represented in it. We'll put a link in the show notes to that. And as I alluded to with Kofi earlier, it's doing a little bit and often, and every month we have the co-working idea project, which is run by people from all over the world. And it is small challenges that you can squeeze into your day running your co-working space. And idea is about inclusion, equity, diversity, and accessibility. So it's helping you educate yourself and ask all those questions that you feel a bit weird asking or don't know where to ask in a safe space, and build a more inclusive and diverse co-working industry. So thank you very much, you three, for your time today. We'll put a link to all of you in the show notes. And just be careful out there, folks. It is a jungle. Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.